Hello guys, we ended our last podcast with Owen Gwynedd attempting to find a place for himself and his Gwynedd within the feudal system of the English crown. We now move to look at a man who had no such intention of taking his place below the English, one of our greatest heroes and a man who holds a place almost near the very top of our national pantheon. Welcome then to the Welsh Historian Podcast, where as part of our series on Welsh rulers, we now cover the life of Llywelyn ap Alwedh. Those of you who follow me on Twitter will know that we've not long finished covering his life through my Welsh timeline, so it's sort of apt that we now get to wrap it all up in the podcast. So, without further ado, let's begin. Excuse me, this has got a bit of a sore throat. Llywelyn's life began in Dolwydd Elen, where he was born in 1173. And at the time, Gwynedd was being ruled by his uncles, Dafydd and Rhodri ap Owain, who were the sons of Owain Gwynedd. His father was Alwedd ap Owain, the eldest son of Owain. He should have inherited Owain's kingdom in full. However, it seems he suffered from some form of disability or deformity that disqualified him from inheritance. His sobriquet or nickname was Alwedd Drwyndwn, which means flat-nosed. If you remember from our last podcast, Owain Gwynedd had married his first cousin, Kristen, and both Llywelyn's uncles had come from this marriage, meaning that in the eyes of many, the two uncles were illegitimate heirs, and the only legitimate successor was Alwedd ap Owain. And as a result, Llywelyn ap Alwedh was the rightful ruler of Gwynedd, certainly in the eyes of the church. Llywelyn's mother, Meredydd, was the daughter of Madog ap Meredydd, the Prince of Powys. Now, Madog had been a long-time enemy of Owain Gwynedd and had accompanied Henry II on campaigns against him and obviously had been defeated at the Battle of Ulo in 1150. So Llywelyn was the son of a mother and father who, like many of the other characters I've covered in these podcasts, had a strong royal pedigree within Wales. It is said that Llywelyn began his campaign then against his uncles early in his life. In fact, Geraint Cymro has this to say on Llywelyn's rise to power. Owen, son of Gruffydd, Prince of North Wales, had many sons, but only one legitimate, namely Ialwedd Drwyndwn, which in Welsh means flat-nosed, who had a son named Llywelyn. This young man, being only 12 years of age, began during the period of our journey to molest his uncles David and Roderick, the sons of Owen by Christiana, his cousin German. And although they had divided amongst themselves all of North Wales, except the land of Conan, and although David, having married the sister of King Henry II, by whom he had one son, was powerfully supported by the English, yet within a few years, the legitimate son, destitute of lands or money, by the aid of divine vengeance, bravely expelled from North Wales those who were born in public incest, though supported by their own wealth and by that of others, leaving them nothing but what the liberality of his own mind and the counsel of good men from pity suggested, a proof that adulterous and incestuous persons are displeasing to God. So in 1194, Llywelyn, with the help of his two cousins, Gruffydd ap Cynan and Meredydd ap Cynan, defeated Dafydd at the Battle of Aberconwy. His other uncle, Rhodri, died 1 year later, and his lands were split between Llywelyn's cousins. Dafydd was finally captured and imprisoned in 1197, and eventually exiled to England. This now meant all of Gwynedd lay in the hands of either Llywelyn or his close allies, his cousin. After the death of Rhys ap Gruffydd, also known as the Lord Rhys, in 1197, the power of Dyhoibarth had shattered following the division of his kingdom between his sons and other factions. Gwenwynwyr ap Owain, the Prince of Powys Wenwynwyr, had attempted to fill the vacuum of leadership in Wales, but in 1198 was defeated by English forces. This defeat now gave Llywelyn the opportunity to catapult his leadership onto the national level, and in 1199 he captured the castle at Ywythrig, or Mold, and began using the title Prince of the Whole of North Wales, even though both his cousins were still alive and kicking. In fact, Gruffydd ap Cynan probably considered himself Prince of the Whole of North Wales, having promised his fealty to King John of England in return for the right to rule Gwynedd. Not that Llywelyn seemed to care. Gruffydd would only survive one more year, dying in 1200, and seemingly being the more powerful of the two of Llywelyn's Gwynedian allies, this just left Llywelyn and Meredith. 1201 represented a serious watermark in Llywelyn's rule, as not only did he arrest Meredith on charges of treason, thus removing his last rival, he also concluded a treaty with King John. This treaty remains the earliest surviving written treaty between an English king and a Welsh ruler, and in it, Llywelyn was confirmed as the ruler of his current possessions and was free to administer them as he saw fit, including the use of Welsh law. All Llywelyn had to do in return was pay homage to John. This status quo did not last long, as only 1 year later, Llywelyn moved against Powys and his last real remaining rival, Gwenllian ap Owain. But his plans were thwarted by the church, who campaigned strongly and effectively against violence between the two Welsh princes. Llywelyn's next move, whether calculated or chance, would be significant and would pay dividends years later. In 1205, he married the natural daughter of King John, Joan, known to the Welsh as Suan. But she was only ever referred to as the Lady of Wales and never Princess of Wales, despite her husband being a prince. Meanwhile, 3 years later, his former adversary, Gwenllian of Powys, was arrested by King John, probably because his son-in-law was now Llywelyn, and Gwenllian's perceived aggression against Llywelyn was not well received by the King of England. But whatever the motive, the lands of southern Powys and northern Ceredigion were all incorporated into Llywelyn's territory. Relations between John and Llywelyn were good enough for Llywelyn to accompany John on an expedition into Scotland in 1209 to campaign against King William I. However, it seems only 1 year later that the two men were not on such good terms. John was discouraged by Llywelyn's new choice of friends and allies, especially in the person of William de Braos, a powerful marcher lord, but by no means a friend of the Welsh. If you want to know more about William de Braos, then I suggest you look up the Abergavenny Massacre. Whilst John led an army in Ireland, an army led by Ranulf, the Earl of Chester, invaded Gwynedd. Llywelyn shrewdly retreated over the Avon Conwy and destroyed his own castle at Deganwy to prevent the English from using it. King John then flip-flopped and decided to help Gwenllian ap Owain in his struggle against Llywelyn. In 1211, John and many other Welsh princes conspired against Llywelyn, and facing such odds, Llywelyn was faced with no choice but to negotiate. Under advice from his council, his wife Suan was sent to meet her father on Llywelyn's behalf. Whether by her efforts or by design, Llywelyn was not completely dispossessed of his lands, a fact John would probably later regret. Instead, he had to pay tribute, provide John with hostages, including his illegitimate son Gruffydd, and agree that if he died without legitimate heir, then the English crown would inherit all his lands. This was the lowest point in Llywelyn's reign, and it can definitely be argued that the only way was up. As John is perhaps most famously known for the Magna Carta, this would seem to give an indication of his personal leadership and administrative skills, and it wasn't long before many Welsh rulers realised that the grass wasn't greener on the English side. They began to ignore their obligations and promises to John and instead began to cozy up to Llywelyn once more. John naturally moved to respond, but he was in too weak a position internally and externally to carry out any planned campaigns in Wales. It is likely any attack on Wales in 1212 would have resulted in not just unified Welsh opposition, but perhaps Scottish intervention and the threat of a civil war from some of his discontented barons. Now, not wanting to hang around, Llywelyn struck back and recaptured Deganwy and Rhuddlan. He concluded an alliance with Philip Augustus of France and then allied himself with those same discontented English barons. So in the same year as the signing of the Magna Carta, Llywelyn entered Amwythig, or Shrewsbury, and captured it. Llywelyn's son was released from his captivity, and Llywelyn's position was immeasurably stronger, whilst John's was critically weaker. Finishing the year off again strongly, Llywelyn led an army of Welshmen from all over Wales on a procession of victories, capturing castles across the country. Crucially, he was also able to appoint two Welshmen to vacant sees in Wales, a challenge that many Welsh rulers had come unstuck against. At Aberdovey in 1216, Llywelyn held a council that confirmed his status as the ruler of most of Wales. Meanwhile, in England, King John died, leaving the underage Henry III to take the throne. In 1217, the de Braos family re-entered the scene as one of William's sons, Reginald, who had been one of Llywelyn's allies, switched his allegiance to King Henry. Reginald had even married one of Llywelyn's daughters. Now, Llywelyn's response was to quickly invade Reginald's lands, marching on Aberhonthy, Abertawe and Hulford, which in English would be Brecon, Swansea and Haverford West. All three towns quickly submitted and paid fines to avoid being attacked by Llywelyn. The next 10 years marked ones of relative peace for Llywelyn and Wales. Henry III and Llywelyn signed a treaty in 1218, known as the Treaty of Worcester, which confirmed Llywelyn as lord and master in his possessions. He married another one of his daughters to John de Braos, Lord of Gower, and nephew of Reginald, his unreliable ally, to undermine him. He also sought alliances with the powerful Marcher lords. Llywelyn was keen to maintain a sense of control and respectful wariness with his English neighbours, and on one occasion compelled one of his vassals to return lands he had taken from Anglo-Norman lords. Llywelyn then set about building stone castles in Wales to help consolidate his position. Cricieth, Dygannu, Dolbarlon, Dolwyddelan and Castle of Bera remain some of the best examples. The 1220s were characterised by conflict with the Marcher lords more than the struggle for the existence of a Welsh nation. Llywelyn had several run-ins with men like William Marshall, the Earl of Pembroke and Hubert de Burgh. That isn't to say that Henry III had no part to play in these conflicts, sometimes supporting his feudal vassals over the independent Welsh prince. That was, of course, to be expected. However, nothing Henry or his Marcher lords did ever truly threatened the independence of Llywelyn, such was his military ability and his diplomacy. It was during these conflicts Llywelyn first captured another William de Braos, this time the son of Reginald, rather than a man who had fallen out of favour with King John mentioned earlier. Llywelyn had ransomed William back to Henry III for £2,000, which in turn he used to pay a sum that Henry was demanding from him to destroy a castle that was half built in Llywelyn's land, a castle that had originally been started by Henry III, rather than Henry demanding Llywelyn pay £2,000 to take down one of Llywelyn's castles. Just clear that one up. After his capture, William decided that he would ally himself with Llywelyn, and two men arranged a marriage between Dafydd ap Llywelyn and Isabella de Braos. William, this cordial relationship turned sour when in 1230 William was found in the bedchamber of Suwon. William would not be long for this world, hanged in May 1230. The marriage still went ahead, and after a year of house arrest, Suwon was returned to the court of Llywelyn. Between 1231 and 1234, Llywelyn again found himself skirmishing with Marcher lords. Hubert de Burgh returned as Llywelyn's primary antagonist and was gaining increasing power in Henry's court. And that support led to Henry often providing royal troops to assist with Hubert's campaigns. That was until 1232, when Hubert fell victim to his rival's conspiracies and was arrested and removed from office. The man who succeeded him was Peter de River, another formidable member of Henry's court. This time, however, Peter had a rival in Richard Marshall, brother of Llywelyn's erstwhile foe, William Marshall, Earl of Pembroke. The two men found a common enemy in Peter and allied themselves to defeat him. Richard died in Ireland in 1233, but Henry was unable to gain an advantage in the civil war, and he began to fear the instability would encourage the French King Louis to intervene against him. So, in 1234, a truce was signed, becoming known as the Peace of the Middle. Initially lasting 2 years, it was renewed every year until Llywelyn's death. Excuse me, I'll just take a drink. sadly, in 1237, Llywelyn died, and in the same year, Llywelyn suffered a stroke that paralysed him. His last years had been spent off the battlefield, campaigning politically to ensure his legitimate son, Dafydd, would inherit his entire realm. Just like Rhys ap Gruffydd in the Hoybarth, Llywelyn had changed the law of his lands to ensure his oldest legitimate son inherited everything, as opposed to his oldest son. Dafydd's older but illegitimate brother was Gruffydd ap Llywelyn. In 1220, he had induced Henry III to recognise Dafydd as his heir. In 1223, Pope Honorius III had also recognised Dafydd and also congratulated Llywelyn on abolishing the practice of inheritance of illegitimate children, as it was morally deplorable to a Christian ruler. In 1226, the Pope also declared Llywelyn to be John's natural daughter. Then in 1238, Llywelyn arranged for the other Welsh princes to swear fealty to Dafydd. His intention had been for them to swear homage, but it's said that King Henry intervened and dissuaded the Welsh princes from doing so. And just for reference, guys, homage can only be paid to one man, usually your liege lord, whereby you pledge military service and submission in return for your titles, whereas fealty was just swearing the act of swearing to be loyal and to be a good vassal to your lord. And you could swear fealty to more than one person, but you could only swear homage to one person. So additionally, Dafydd's marriage to Isabella de Braus was designed to ensure that, as William de Braus had no male heirs, that Dafydd's heir would inherit the huge de Braus estates in South Wales. Llywelyn died in 1240 at the Abbey of Aberconwy, which he had founded, and was buried there and remained there until the abbey was moved to Minon, near Llanwrst. Perhaps Llywelyn's greatest battle was one he never won, because Llywelyn's plans for succession amounted to naught on his death. King Henry, with Llywelyn now out of the way, refused to recognise Dafydd. Llywelyn ap Alwedh remains and will continue to remain one of this nation's great heroes. When you put his life and his achievements into context, then it becomes clear just what he achieved. From his rise to power from 1200 onwards, he drove forward with an unstoppable aim to consolidate his position in Wales. Following the setback in 1210, he never really looked back. Of course, he was aided by the fact that King John had a kingdom beset by internal troubles, and his death left a minority underage king on the throne of England. But for almost 30 years, Llywelyn ruled an independent Wales, using Welsh law, appointing Welsh bishops in Bangor and St David's, and receiving the submission of other Welsh princes. Naturally, he had to play politics with the English crown and with marcher lords on your doorstep. You were never going to have an uninterrupted peace, but he manipulated and mastered the challenges put in front of him successfully without loss of territory or prestige. It's an achievement that in this category would probably rank him as the foremost of those Welsh leaders who sought to create a distinct Welsh nation. Even Owain Glyndwr himself, who possibly occupies a much greater place in our national psyche, didn't achieve some of what Llywelyn did. But Llywelyn still fell at the final hurdle, as so many did. His plans for his realm post-death did not come to fruition. Well, sorry to end on a sour note, and apologies for bringing more Llywelyns, Owains, Dafydds, etc. into your brains. But I hope you enjoyed this one. I hope you learned something, and I hope you'll join me again on the next episode of the Welsh Historian Podcast. Diolch yn fawr. Hwyl!